We're talking deep value investing with Michael Campagna, co-founder and senior investment analyst at Morris Capital. This is the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they put it all together. Returning to the Market Call today, Michael Campagna. He is senior investment analyst, co-founder at Morris Capital Management. Morris, M-O-E-R-U-S. I'm spelling it because if you go to morriscap.com, you can learn more about the Morris Worldwide Value Fund, M-O-W-I-X, and more about how the firm does what it does. Michael Campagna, it's great to have you back on Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck. It is always a pleasure to be here.
You are a deep value investor. But even in deep value, we need a full understanding of how it works. And then we need to know how it's working now, given these market conditions.
Yeah, you know, value is interesting. Everybody says they have a unique process. Everybody's got a special way of doing things. And then somehow they all end up owning the same things, which I always find comical. But at Morris, we are a global-oriented deep value investment shop. So we start with the entire world and we build a portfolio of around 40 securities that seeks to take advantage of transitory issues and buy companies at deep discounts to their here and now value. So not what they're going to be worth or not when they what they will be worth at some point in the future, but what a willing buyer would be willing to pay for them today. You know, everybody says they want to buy good companies with good management at cheap prices, and frankly, we don't really think that exists. So to try and find opportunities, we really focus on areas that the market hates. So that could be, you know, companies perceived to be low quality, countries that are facing macro challenges, countries facing political challenges, you know, industries that are being disrupted, industries left for dead. You know, we look through those areas that are disliked by the markets and try to find companies that are trading at a nice discount to their net asset value. Now, more important than finding the discount is focusing on risk management. I always say it's easy to buy a stock that's cheap. You just look at whatever's down and buy something. What's harder is buying a stock that's cheap that's not going to remain cheap. Stocks are generally cheap for a reason. Companies don't just turn cheap because people dislike them if they're great businesses. The market has to dislike them for a reason, and we have to understand what that reason is and make sure that they have survivability. Survivability is so important that actually it's our firm name. So, you know, you spelled out the Morris earlier. The firm's name is an ancient Latin word, which is for a city's defensive walls. So it's what allowed cities to survive throughout history. We really feel that any investment we make has to have a Morris. It has to have that survivability. In doing this, we are completely bottom up, but we call ourselves macro myopic, but macro aware. So what that means is we're not making predictions about what macro variables are going to be in the future or where oil prices are going or gold prices are going or anything like that. But we do understand where they are in the scheme of history and how they're impacting bottom-up fundamentals. And as I noted, this results in a pretty eclectic portfolio, around 40 securities today, all around the world that are unique companies that are all going through their own things. And it also results in active share that is quite high. Our active share is almost 99% right now versus the MSCI All Country World Index.
So as you are looking at current conditions, I mean, we've got a market that seems right now to be doing some repricing. How active does that make you? Does that perk things up for you? Or do you need to see a lot more happen before valuations reach your levels where you're really interested?
I think in the US, we need to see a lot more. A lot is an understatement here. You know, what we've seen over the past couple of months is a drop in the bucket, frankly, for what we think is a normalization that is coming. You know, international outperformed the US strongly last year. And a lot of investors ask the question of, okay, that was great. Is that one and done? Or are we done? Or is that going to continue? And I always point to the long-term chart. And if you look at any long-term chart, JP Morgan's got a good one of when international outperforms and when the US outperforms. The US has outperformed essentially for 15 years running at this point, with the exception of last year. So I always point to that and say, you know, valuations are much cheaper outside of the United States. Valuations are much more attractive as an investor because of that. And I think there's a lot more room to run. You know, we're starting to see the U.S. stocks, which are largely priced for very, very high expectations, come a little bit closer to earth, but they've still got a long way, in my opinion, to fall before we would get interested.
Which international markets do you like the best? Because we hear a lot about valuations being better internationally, but there's a bit of an argument over where in the world to invest, and also how is tariffs and the tariff picture ever changing impacting any of that?
Yeah, I mean, the tariff picture impacts all of it, right? Because, you know, we look at a company, we own a company called Samsonite, which I think I talked about last time I was on, which obviously manufactures luggage and then sells it into the United States of America. They mostly manufacture it in Southeast Asia. And with Liberation Day tariffs and all of this chaos, there's been a lot of wrenches thrown into their manufacturing logistics. I think it's pretty interesting because the market paints that with a broad brush as this is a bad thing, which at first glance it is. But when you dig down into understanding how Samsonite is actually manufacturing, you would learn that 90% of their manufacturing is outside of China. So that's point number one. And then point number two is 85% of their manufacturing is actually subcontracted as opposed to owned factories. And why that's really interesting is as these tariffs and as these trade deals are coming and going and the dust finally settles at some point, I think Samsonite's going to be in a much better position to rejigger their manufacturing footprint to take advantage of the lower tariffs. But you know, the market looks at it as one thing, as tariffs equal bad fundamentals for Samsonite, which again, at first glance is not incorrect, but I think that the actual reality is more nuanced than that. So that's a company that is listed in Hong Kong right now. It's actually a US Massachusetts-based company, but only listed in Hong Kong due to a quirk of history. But aside from that, we're continuing to find opportunities in Latin America, continuing to find opportunities in the United Kingdom, in Canada, and here and there in the United States of America. But you have to be very, very specific about what you're looking at, as opposed to just thinking that the entire market is attractive.
Given what we have seen with artificial intelligence and the rest, as a deep value manager, is there a place of that trade for you? Because the good news is that unlike the internet bubble days, we have real earnings for some of these companies or many of these companies. So it's not entirely like valuations are not fictional. And at the same time, there's a lot of trading on hope and trading on, okay, I believe this can work, but you got to prove it to me. I would think as a deep value investor, you need somebody who the proof doesn't show up on time to make it that they're priced right for you.
Spot on. So it is creating a lot of opportunities for us, but not in the way that you think. So we are not looking at any of the AI companies and thinking these are really attractive investments, just given the fact that, as you rightly note, a lot of this is trading on hope and on expectations of future earnings. But what this is also doing is it's focusing the market's attention on fewer and fewer stocks, which is creating opportunities outside of that small locus of focus. I always use the metaphor of a flashlight. If you have a floodlight that is very wide, the market is looking at a wide array of companies. But right now, I would argue that we have a spotlight, and the market is very, very focused on a handful at best of AI companies that people think are going to be the winner, and is largely ignoring a lot of other companies that maybe challenge in certain ways by AI, but also are going to be made more efficient in many ways by AI and have opportunities unlocked for them. So I think of this more akin to, you know, the internet revolution, as opposed to trying to pick those specific companies that are going to win. The whole market's focused on just those handful of companies. I want to look at the opportunities that are being created in the second and third derivatives, and those are being ignored largely today because they're not pure AI plays. So it is creating a lot of opportunity.
So you mentioned things like Samsonite, but what would be a poster child for the methodology? What is a good exemplar of deep value somewhere around the world that you think investors ought to be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think an easy example is we own a company called Travis Perkins right now, which is a UK-listed buildings product distributor. They effectively have two businesses. Number one is buildings product distribution, where they have a network of yards around the United Kingdom. It's a highly fragmented market. They are the number one player in the country with only a 15% market share. The second business is a company called Toolstation, which is akin to small micro hardware stores that sell screwdrivers and hammers and the like to contractors. As you would rightly imagine, as we've seen in the US, as interest rates have risen, that's been a very strong headwind for this business. You've had people that were doing renovations cutting back on doing renovations. People have been buying less homes than they had historically been buying. But what's also interesting is that's the short term. But if you look at the long term runway, the UK has a persistent shortage of housing, just like the United States does, for construction. And secondly, what's different about the UK versus the US is their housing stock is much older, right? So that means that their housing stock needs a lot more work to be brought up to current trends. So you have a near-term or a mid-term challenging business, which has destroyed earnings. And, you know, earnings are about half of what they were 3 years ago. You layer on to that the chaos from inflation that came from COVID. And then there were some company-specific or self-inflicted wounds that the previous management team had done. They've got a new CEO, new CFO, and a new chairman at this point. So even though the business continues to be challenged on fundamentals, long term, we think it's a really fantastic opportunity. They've got a lot of growth runway that the market is not giving any value to. And you're buying it at a 40% discount to my estimate of its in-place today value, not what it could grow into. So I think that's a really attractive situation that, you know, you talk to most people and their eyes glaze over when you start talking about buildings products distribution.
What makes you sell? I mean, when you have the right value, what makes you sell?
I mean, it could be valuation, right? So if we've done something right and the stock has appreciated significantly and it's trading at a nice premium to our estimate of net asset value, we'll sell. If we ever make a mistake, which all investors do, and that includes us, you know, we'll quickly admit that and change. What won't make us sell, though, which I think differentiates us from others, is we don't sell just because the stock is down. I'm probably one of the few managers that really genuinely hopes that the stock price goes down once I started buying it, because, you know, if we've done the work ahead of time, which we feel that we have done, and nothing fundamentally has changed and the survivability has not changed and the stock is down 40%, that's a fantastic situation. And you know, that's where a holding that is a, you know, middle of the road holding for us becomes a top 10 holding for us. Whereas others may be looking to sell in that type of scenario, we are looking to add more significantly.
How fully invested are you now and, you know, at all times? Because I know my audience will want to know that answer.
Yeah. So we are pretty much fully invested at this point. You know, the world is not wanting for opportunities today. You know, with everybody focused on one thing and one thing only, there's a lot of opportunities in stodgy, boring businesses that people don't think about. So think about real estate owners, think about real estate services companies, think about, you know, metals and mining, which has kind of come back into favor over the past year, but had largely been ignored because of technological advancements and, you know, people thinking that Bitcoin was going to replace gold or that electric vehicles were going to replace internal combustion engines and therefore you don't need platinum anymore. You know, there's a lot of opportunities that are created by the market being so hyper-focused on so few things.